New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined by Pat Corain for probably what will be one of our most important opinion shows that we end up doing, because we are gonna go through our zero RB list. We're gonna go through the tiers. I have not written my list out yet. I'll probably do that a little bit later in the month of August, and I assume Pat will do something similar. And then, of course, we'll all be waiting for the actual zero RB list from Sean Siegel. When it comes out, he does his 10 through 15, his 5 through 10, and then his 1 through 5. But I think that we've been pounding the pavement on enough drafts. I've done a football guys. I'm signed up right now for 5 main events. I think you guys have already done one. You guys did a great show on Ship Chasing about what you've learned already drafting in main events and what you'll be looking out for. I mean, you guys have probably already drafted the winner because you got Daryl Henderson in the 10th round on 2 teams already. So you're probably fine. Like, it's probably fine for you guys. You're like, zero RB, bro. We got 2 RB1s on our teams.
Yeah. We, both those teams did not have zero running back builds. They had, the one elite running back builds with the elite running back kind of mixed up. We have one with Saquon, which we'll see how that goes, and one with Antonio Gibson. And both of those teams have Kittle. So we need some other things to break right, obviously. But yeah, that was some nice equity on Daryl Henderson. And yeah, we're actually doing one right now where we went full zero running back out of the 104. Didn't take our first running back to the 9th round, where it was able to mix in Kittle again, actually, who fell all the way back to the 109. And then we also got Lamar Jackson falling to the 6th. So we have, that is like a true zero running back with the elite onesies, first running back in the 9th round. So definitely, you know, drafting zero running back. I haven't written out my list as well, so kind of like still thinking.
Yeah, this is kind of the brainstorm, I think, because yeah, there will probably be some guys that you're into that I'm out on, some guys that you're into that like Ramondre Stevenson. I think that Ramondre Stevenson is going to kind of have a rookie year like Damian Harris, where he's going to be a game day inactive a lot. I you know what I mean?
It all comes down to Sony Michel, I think. You know, does he make the team? Does he get traded? Because if he's gone, then Ramondre Stevenson is pretty interesting, although there is a path to failure here because Brandon Bolden is back. Did you know that?
Yep, I did know that. Yeah,
he opted out last year. I completely forgot that he existed. He is back, big time special teams player for the Patriots. If he makes the roster, which he probably will, then you know that's where you see it's like Michelle leaves, Bolden makes the roster, is the active running back 3 on game days because of special teams. And that's when we get the Ramondre inactive. So, yeah, I mean, I think Ramondre is fine to be pretty skeptical of. In general, with like we're going to be talking, these are zero running back guys that I think generally manage leagues is the focus here. And although, you know, you can certainly draft zero running back at best ball, but it's not, you know, I'm mixing that in with some other strategies there. For me, in managed, it's basically one elite or zero running back, unless something really weird happens with the values. So in managed leagues, I think important to prioritize guys who we're going to get more information on.
So right, like Ramondre, exactly. Yeah,
Ramondre is sort of a mix. We might get more information with the Michelle thing, but we also, you know, he's not a perfect example.
Michelle might get cut, and Ramondre might still be inactive in week one.
Right, right.
Which is, which I guess, by the way, would maybe be a check mark in his position as a managed league guy, because if that happens, if Bolden is active week one and Michelle gets cut and Stevenson is inactive, you can just say, you know, I took my swing and he's going on the waiver wire for, you know, whoever pops in Anthony McFarland week one or whatever.
Yeah, that's so that's why I think Stevenson is kind of a mix. Like, as long as you're willing to cut him if Michelle's on the roster, like he's actually a decent bet, Stevenson, for, you know, the main event drafts now, where you get the pre week one waiver wire run, where you are going to get some information in training camp. But I think other guys, you know, it's truly ambiguous. We kind of got some information already on Quadri Ollison. That was one, you know, we got him really late in the first main event we did. This, you know, he's a guy that it's so ambiguous in Atlanta. Are we going to get information about how these guys are actually running? I think Joshua Kelly, Larry Roundtree, like those highly ambiguous situations where we're going to have more information coming in through training camp are more desirable, because you actually want to either be really right or really wrong. Because most of these, you know, 15th, 16th, 17th round picks are pretty useless. So swing big.
Yeah. So let's start with the bottom tier. These are like rounds 15 through 20 in the main event and football guys. I think this is obviously, this is where you can take the most swings. These are guys that we are anticipating. You could cut this guy after week one or even week zero, right? You do a main event draft right now. Waivers run once before the first week of the season. And these are guys who maybe don't even make their teams, maybe don't even make their NFL teams, or are placed on the PUP list, or just for whatever reason are themselves expendable. And I have the ADP pulled up from Fantasy Mojo. If you guys are seriously grinding fantasy football this year in the FFPC, I would definitely recommend getting the Fantasy Mojo subscription. So my first guy is actually Larry Roundtree, or Josh Kelly. I think both of them are the same. And I saw our buddy Eric Byme for he's going back on this because he's a Justin Jackson guy, which I was too. I'd been a Justin Jackson guy up until this point. Me too. But Justin Jackson did start the training camp on the COVID-19 list. Now, I think he's already back, so it was not like a long extended absence. I think had Justin Jackson been on the COVID-19 list for like 3 weeks, I think we could just write him like he's just getting cut. He's not going to make the team. I do still think it is somewhat of a competition, but most of what we are getting out of Chargers camp since it has started indicates that it's going to be, I think it sounds like it's going to be Josh Kelly, though this regime is the regime that chose Roundtree, right? Joshua Kelly was a fourth round pick from the coaching staff last year. Justin Jackson was a pick from the coaching staff two coaching staffs ago, who just, you know, happened to hang around the team. I am now changing my exposures towards Josh Kelly.
Yeah, I think Kelly and Roundtree, it's time to kind of move towards. I think just generally, like, you should have exposure to all of these guys, right? And I already have my exposure to Jackson, so I'm good there. And it's time for me to move to Kelly and Roundtree. I've actually been going Roundtree first because of, you know, what you said about the coaching staff. And also, like, Kelly was just not good last year.
Right.
The coaching staff that drafted him quickly lost faith in him. They're playing Kalen Ballage over him. Kalen Ballage, like, looked pretty good. Like, it's actually a pretty decent position to be in that Chargers offense. And so,
yeah, super, because they don't have a dominant red zone threat wide receiver at all unless they transition Mike Williams back into that role. There's like crazy Austin Ekeler red zone stats, like something like he has like three carries inside the 5 yard line in like his entire Chargers career or something like that. Like, it would be a huge departure for this coaching staff to use him as a ball. Now they'll throw him the ball some there, But to use him as a ball carrier in the red zone, I just think is not happening.
I agree. And so that creates value for someone. And with like the Jaguars, you know, I feel like last year I didn't do a good enough job just going like, well, I want one of, you know, Reichwell Armstead, who was the other guy? God, I can't remember these guys that we thought might play over James Robinson.
Reichwell Armstead, Chris Thompson. There was another guy too. Dare was on their roster, right?
No, it was a bigger dude. I honestly forget. I drafted him and I completely
2020 Jaguars depth chart. Let me see if I can figure it out.
It's got a D and an O. James Robinson, that was clearly the guy, but I think the takeaway for me is like, why wasn't I just kind of mixing
Devin Ozigbo,
you know, there you go.
Yeah.
So just kind of mixing it up. Now there's not going to be a payoff as big as what we got out of Jacksonville, 'cause that was like the entire role was, but like, it wasn't just me. Like most people were not really wading into the waters because on any given draft, they didn't want to be completely wrong about who the guy was. But I do think there's a payoff here that's still worth going in for. So I want Kelly. I want Roundtree. I want Jackson overall, but I kind of already have Jackson. So I'm focusing more on the other two guys right now.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the bottom of the list. Like those are, I mean, probably right now, if you did a main event, they would be available in the 20th round. Perhaps maybe they'll get a little bit of steam. Like, whichever, if you know, it's week two of the preseason and Joshua Kelly scores a touchdown with the first team offense, like Justin Herbert hands him the ball on the 3-yard line and Josh Kelly scores, I mean, he could be like a 14th round pick, honestly, because we do know that grinder back role is relatively valuable inside of that offense. So that is kind of the bottom of the list. Who are some of your bottom of the list guys?
I mean, you know, my bottom of the list guy still Ty Johnson. Still into Ty Johnson. Just, you know, the San Francisco system, we know that, you know, last year, and we'll get to him, I think, Jerick McKinnon was one of the guys who actually paid off in the late rounds last year. And he struggled through dead legs. Like, it wasn't an ideal season for McKinnon, but he still, because of the way that offense runs, there's a lot of value for kind of whoever the guy is that week. I think that the Jets could be similar. You have Michael Carter, interesting in his own right, but a smaller rookie running back, the chances of him becoming like a true workhorse, just getting every touch, very low. And so, you know, Tevin Coleman, Ty Johnson, these guys seem to be fairly ahead of McGuire. So, you know, if it's three guys, I want stabs at all three guys. Ty Johnson is the cheapest. It just sort of continues to make sense for me to keep drafting him. And I think the Jets are going to be a lot better than people are acting like they're going to be. Like, they were abysmal last year. Like, there will be, I think, quite a bit more value in this backfield than there was last year. And think again,
well,
not only were they abysmal,
the Jets, they kept running. They'd be down three touchdowns and they'd still be running the ball, which I don't think you will see with this coaching staff. I think that they would tilt a little bit more pass heavy, which would obviously, if Ty Johnson does lock down the pass, like he could have like a James White-esque style, like 70 reception season. If the Jets win 5 games and they tilt more towards league average, like pass expectation based on scoreline, I don't take Ty Johnson a ton, but I, especially on true zero RB teams, like where week one, you might just need someone to grind out like 4 receptions for 50 yards. Those are the types of teams that can use Ty Johnson.
Yeah. Although I view him more like McKinnon, where he's going to get some receptions, but it's more a play on this guy's like really fast. This dude's like going to be efficient. He's going to get some rushes. He's bigger than Michael Carter. I think he might be the same size as Tevin Coleman, roughly. He's around like 210. So he's not like a scat back necessarily, although he can catch. So that's basically the play. I think it's sort of a bet on the Jets offense, another bet on an ambiguous backfield. And I want all three. So you know, I'm not exclusively taking Ty. I also take Tevin and I also take Carter. This is the one I'm probably the best at, where I actually do genuinely have like a lot of exposure to all three running backs in this backfield.
Yeah, which I think is, I mean, ambiguous backfields are, you know, what we are trying to target. I would say the Jets probably is the most ambiguous backfield. I mean, we truly don't know who's going to get the first carry in week one. Like, I don't think we know at all. And that is one of the few backfields you can say that about.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I would bet Michael Carter, but like, you could lose that bet.
Yeah. Like, Michael Carter is probably like minus 120 to get the first carry in week one, but by no means a lock. Okay, a guy I think we're going to see rise a ton, Quadre Olison. I was not really taking him until recently. Our buddy Sigmund Bloom has been telling us that this was going to happen. Olison is not like, you know, these zero RB guys we like to draft. We like to draft, you know, really talented players, athletes who can, with more work, really impress. I don't think that will be Quadre Olison. Not a really productive, you know, player when he's been given the opportunities, but like we talked about this on the show last week. I mean, does anyone have more fragile of a projection than Mike Davis? Quadre Olison, if he gets the goal line carries, I mean, even so, like if Quadre Olison was going in the 12th round, I would be completely out. I'd be like, there's just no upside to him paying there. But with your last pick in a lot of these drafts, I actually just did a 20 round drafters best ball championship this morning and did take Quadre Olison in the 20th round. And like, that is like picking nickels up on the street, because everything we are seeing from Falcons camp is he is the clear number two running back. It's not Hawkins. They don't view Patterson as they view Patterson as like the way the Vikings were using him at the end, like as like a weapon player. Like he's going to do jet motion and he's not going to be a pure wide receiver, but he's also not going to be like, he's not doing like running back drills.
Yeah. And I don't think Mike Davis is a lock to get the first carry. Like, I actually think there's enough.
That's insane. That is insane. But I think you're right. I think you're right.
Like, because what if they view Mike Davis as more of, you know, the guy who's like, he's like a pass catcher plus, and Olison is more of their like two down grinder. You know what I mean? Like, would that be so crazy that they view Mike Davis, a journeyman running back who the Bears basically didn't play at all the year before, and then he goes to the Panthers and we don't draft him? The fantasy community doesn't even think he's worth drafting behind Christian McCaffrey. We're drafting
Reggie Bonifon.
This is not, I actually haven't had coffee today. So that's,
oh my gosh, dude, how are you? How are you alive right now?
Apparently coffee is what remembers all the players' names for me. Yeah. We're drafting Reggie Bonifon over this dude. And now if I say like, he might not get the first carry in Atlanta, I bet you like most people's reaction to that was like, Pat's an idiot, but he might not. They might give it to this big dude who kind of better fits the mold of, you know, the big grinding rusher that Arthur Smith had. Now, there's quite a big chasm between Henry and Olison as far as talent goes. But if he wants to have like a larger human kind of battering down defenses as his primary rusher, he actually does have an option here.
Which would be a classic football guy thing. Would just be a classic football guy thing to do. Okay, a couple other guys. Damian Williams for me in this group is a clear, like I Tari Cohen not only is on the PUP list right now, but it sounds like he is not close to coming back. It sounds like he actually might be a candidate for the designated for return IR. So then Damian Williams presents us our classic some standalone value playing third downs and then loads of contingent value where, I mean, we literally saw what happened in the Bears backfield when it was only down to one running back last year, David Montgomery, what he finishes the running back 4 points per game, I think it was like, and their quarterback situation is going to be much better this year. Damian has become the guy I am taking most often over the last like 10 days or so. Like I go into drafts being like, okay, Damian is going to be the fourth running back I take like a huge percentage of the time.
Damian's an awesome target. He's got, he fits everything. I mean, the other thing is he's balled out at times and he's getting a little older. Was he 29? But he's had,
I think he's 30 actually.
Okay. He's had these stretches coming off a year we opted out, you know. He's not bulletproof, but he's got the, you know, some reception equity. He would very clearly be ahead of even a healthy Tariq Cohen were David Montgomery to go down. I mean,
yeah, I mean, we've seen this happen. Yeah, we've seen this happen with Cohen. The status of the early down back does nothing to change Tarik Cohen's profile. He plays right. his role and does not do anything more than that.
Yeah, and they didn't have a backup running back last year. It was kind of nuts. So there's really
Remember Ryan Nall? Remember placing fab bids for Ryan Nall?
I do. I drafted Ryan Nall in like the 20th round of a main event draft right before the season.
Yep.
They added Herbert, right? Khalil Herbert. So I suppose in the event, you know, that Montgomery goes down, maybe they activate him from the practice squad, or if they've been stashing him as a game day inactive, that could form a bit of a committee. But again, I think that goes to the talent point of Damian Williams. Like, I actually think Damian Williams, if he hasn't
hit the age, and the coaching, they were Matt Nagy and Damian Williams were together in Kansas City.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So I mean, Damian feels pretty straightforward. So I think this is I think there's about to be a tier break here. I'm not as in on Samaje Perine as our friend Eric Beinfor is. Maybe I should be more bullish on Xavier Jones, given that what we are now 2 weeks after Cam Akers has the Achilles thing and they have not brought in any aging veteran running back.
I'm kind of in on Xavier Jones a little bit. I mean, he's definitely someone I'm intrigued by. I want to get some exposure to right now. He was very productive in college, right? And he made the team last year, stuck around. Jake Funk is one of these, you know, very athletic guys, doesn't have much production. And like, who are they going to add? Like, if they add Sony Michel, is Sony Michel like definitely a better bet than Xavier Jones?
No, Xavier Jones can catch passes. He's an older prospect, but he was like one of those guys who cost like $10,000 in college football DFS his final year at SMU. He was like unbelievable.
Yeah. So I'm intrigued by him. And the other thing is, and this might tell you, I know you've been kind of a Daryl Henderson guy, but like, is there a chance that Henderson ends up just kind of being who Henderson's been, you know, more of an explosive guy, a little bit more on the change of pace side? Like, Xavier Jones, I think, does actually have a little bit of an opening here to establish himself as like a true committee with Henderson, you know, with that type of production profile. I think he has a little bit more upside. It's like a little bit more ambiguous here than we probably want it to be, given that, you know, we all have kind of a lot of Daryl Henderson right now.
Yeah. So for me, Daryl Williams would have been in this next tier of like true upside handcuffs that we're about to talk about. But we are starting to get a little bit of drumbeat on Jerick McKinnon. Like, McKinnon might actually make the team. McKinnon might actually be the third down running back. There was an Athletic article from this, or an Arrowhead Pride article from this last week. Patrick Mahomes said, "I think he's going to be a playmaker. I've seen it from day one, right when he got in here. The way he's able to run and catch the ball out of the backfield. I mean, I think he's a playmaker that will be a big part of our offense." Andy Reid said, "He's a talented receiver. He's been doing this for a long time, especially for running backs. Longevity in this league, the average longevity is like 3 years. So for him to have been in it and doing this long, he brings great experience, but he for sure has a knack in the passing game." These are not particularly positive quotes for Daryl Williams, because the only thing that Daryl Williams has to offer is being a good pass blocker and like not messing up. Like, no one is complimenting Daryl Williams's like explosion in the open field. Like a healthy non dead leg Jerick McKinnon is actually like an asset to the Chiefs offense in a way that Daryl Williams is not.
Yeah. I actually haven't been taking a lot of Daryl Williams, and I certainly don't want to be taking him now. It goes to the kind of the talent thing. Like, Daryl Williams is not very good, and he had a lot of opportunity. He played a ton of passing down snaps.
He did. He played a lot.
Did nothing with them. So like, what's the upside really? Is he going to, like, the upside is really that he gets like kind of the same role he had last year. He's not going to eat into Clyde Edwards-Helaire's role. And if Helaire goes down, I think they're going to play McKinnon. I think they're going to play Darwin Thompson, whoever else they end up keeping around.
Yeah, probably they play Darwin.
Yeah. So like, I don't have much upside as like a two. He doesn't have the Damian Williams profile where like he just turns into a workhorse down the stretch, kind of helps win you your league in the playoffs. Like, I just don't think he has that in him. So I haven't really been taking him.
So my thought with Daryl is that because I don't view Clyde Edwards-Helaire as like a super talented running back either, that the bets actually really are not that different. That were well, they to be,
then you should take Les Helaire.
No, because that is kind of the wrong way to view it for me. Because so yes, I think CH is better than Daryl Williams, right? Like he clearly is a little bit more agile, a little bit more explosive, but really the whole value is just in can any one of these Chiefs running backs just play 80% of the snaps? And of course CH would be the only one I think that could do that. And if CH does that, he's like, and they just don't go away from him. Because remember what happened is they started out the season doing that and they were like, this is not working. But it's not like it was really his fault. Like, remember that goal line sequence where they gave him the ball, I think it was three times in a row, and he literally got hit behind the line on all of them. And like, as a coach, that's really frustrating. And you blame it on the running back kind of, but it's not like, it's like, would Ezekiel Elliott have scored there? Like, would Christian McCaffrey have scored there? Would Derrick Henry have scored there? Like, probably not.
Derrick Henry probably scores.
Don't be that guy.
Come on.
But I just think, yeah. And you know, I actually read another, I think Doug Farrar, who writes for USA Today, actually wrote this kind of interesting piece the other day about the Chiefs where they've won all these games the last couple of years, and it's not like kind of like late, like how the Patriots actually went more conservative and rush heavy during the regular season, just because they did not feel the need to be setting all these records and doing all this stuff because it was about the playoffs for them. And he made the argument that, you know, they trade for Orlando Brown, they get Duvernay-Tardif back. He opted out last season. And then two of their other guys who got injured last season came back. He made the argument that it would actually not be that surprising to see the Chiefs have a more conservative run heavy approach this season, just to kind of protect Mahomes, to protect, I mean, Kelsey's 32, you know, all of these things. And I don't know if I buy it, but I at least view that in the range of outcomes. And in that scenario, I do think Daryl would play more and have more standalone value.
Well, I view the CEH bet a little differently, which is that like, what we saw from him as a rookie is not necessarily who he is in a, you know, in a really talented offense that, you know, like we saw with Le'Veon Bell entering his second year, where like he was like kind of bad as a rookie. And then he's able to blossom in his second year, just like we look for all these wide receivers to make real big leaps.
Yeah. That's the right way to view it.
Yeah. And we have all the stuff about the workload, but that kind of goes hand in hand. It's like the workload will follow if he plays a lot better in his second year, which I think, you know, the CH, we're, you know, disappointed that Jonathan Taylor didn't get taken there with that last pick of the first round, but
I can't even,
and certainly DeAndre Swift would have been more interesting, but like CH was going to go in the second round if the Chiefs didn't take him. Like he was viewed, or I mean, he 100% would have gone day two, right? So he was viewed as like a strong running back prospect. The Chiefs weren't like on an island in that respect. So the idea that he, you know, can take a jump, I think is like very, very plausible. That's one of the reasons that I really like him. But, you know, again, another thing Daryl Williams doesn't have access to. Daryl Williams isn't going to show a lot more talent wise.
No, he's not going to play better this season. Like the yeah. range, like, and the he thing I like, worse. Yeah. And the thing I do like about taking CH is I do feel like even if he has a bad season or even if he does not improve as a player, like I feel like he will have a kind of like Josh Jacobs last year, where Josh Jacobs didn't really play well and the offense didn't really do that well, but he still kind of just grinded out the numbers just by availability. And CH will have the ability to do that in a much better offense. But we literally talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire on this podcast like way too much every single week. So the next tier, I think, is actually the pass catching running backs who have no upside. Well,
there's a couple guys here I wanted to ask.
Yeah, you. Go for it.
Because, you know, and I know this has gotten near and dear to your heart, but how are we playing Miami?
I never take Gaskin, and I sometimes take Ahmed, and I sometimes take Malcolm Brown. I feel like this is a situation where we're going to get a lot more information in the preseason, and we're going to get a lot of information in week one. And in a lot of managed leagues, like not in main event and football guys leagues, but like 12 team home leagues, you know, I don't think Ahmed or Brown will be drafted all that much. And so those, I think, are going to be real priority week one waiver wire guys if Myles Gaskin doesn't come out and is the lead back, or, you know, if Laird is not playing third downs or whatever.
Yeah, I've been taking some Ahmed, and I have a little bit of Brown. We did one of the ship chasing leagues with some that we were co-managing with some ship chasing listeners that they wanted Brown. And I was like, all right, let's take Brown, you know, like maybe this is like the right fit for him. I know some film guys are really on him, but my own personal lean is Ahmed just because I thought he looked really good last year.
He looked good. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, kind of the talent thing. Like if Gaskin goes down, Ahmed gets another shot and he looks really good again, like they might just start leaning on him. So another backfield that I think has some ambiguity to it, more in that, you know, in kind of the Chargers mold, where there's probably a second guy who's going to get some work in a committee. But, you know, Gaskin, I mean, Gaskin's not like that good. The idea that he doesn't lose the job over the course
of
the
year. He was a really, really productive college player, like total workhorse in college. And he did not do anything when he was active for Miami to suggest that they needed to be giving another running back the ball. Now, granted, like there are a lot of externalities with him. He was a later round pick. He didn't do anything as a rookie, but like all evidence we have of Gaskin on the field is like all good evidence. Like there was never a time where you were like, man, they should really try someone else.
You can say the same for Philip Lindsay though. Like these guys, they have no protection. These late round guys, they really don't have any protection. They have to like constantly show it every day or someone else can take their job. So, I think Gaskin's good, and I agree with you that like he probably should be more entrenched than I think he is, but I honestly don't think he has much of a moat to one of these other guys kind of taking that job over the course of the year.
Yeah, so maybe we should put Ahmed a little bit higher. So like this would be my like bottom tier group. It would be Quadre Ellison. It's still Darrell Williams in there for me. Definitely Damian Williams. And then we didn't really talk about him, but Samaje Perine. I have nothing interesting to say about Perine. We talked about him in the Ambiguous Backfield show 2 weeks ago. It seems like he will be both a handcuff and maybe a small passing down role for him in Cincinnati. I do not feel strong. And then Larry Rountree for me is kind of the bottom tier group of guys.
I'm into Perine. I think the comp for Perine for me is Jamal Williams. One of these guys that, you know, like yep. 2 years ago, we decided, you know, it's going to be Aaron Jones, and Jamal Williams is not someone we want. He was like one of the few guys from, I think, like the 2018 draft or something in that range that hit because he was super, super cheap that year. And I think that, you know, we are projecting with Joe Mixon that, you know, and they've said like, we're going to give him the three down role, et cetera, et cetera. But everyone says that about like everyone right now. So the fact that they were playing Gio Bernard.
Except for the Cowboys. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to get Rico Dowdle some touches.
Except for the Cowboys. They're, don't they know? You're supposed to say we're going to feed Zeke until he pukes. Like,
no, they're lying. I mean, there's never been a bigger lie from a coaching staff than we're going to get Rico Dowdle snaps. Like, Rico Dowdle's like total touches for this year is like under 10.
It's Rico season. Yeah, we're going to get Rico. I think that with Perine, you do have a chance for some standalone value. You get, you know, and you get the Jamal Williams, like 2 weeks where he's like very, very clearly the guy you want to slot into your lineup for those weeks. You know, and we saw that at the end of last year, week 16, he had a big performance over 20. I think it was like 23, 24 points per game points in that game. There's no poor game. It was one game, but, similar to Jamal Williams, where I think they'd kind of lean on him and Chris Evans would mix in or something with a little bit of the passing work. But I actually do. I think he's pretty interesting. And partly because of the price, like if he was moving up into that pass catcher tier.
Yeah. If he was going next to Alexander Mattison.
Yeah. No, thank you. But he's getting treated like he's not the clear handcuff with a little bit of standalone value. And I think he, one, is the clear handcuff, and two, he might actually have a little bit of standalone value.
Yeah. Okay. And then this pass catching tier, this one is very easy to define. It is James White. It is Giovanni Bernard. it is JD McKissick and then Nyheim Hines. And then given what we've heard out of Eagles camp the last couple days, I'm actually going to put Kenneth Gainwell in this group. A couple guys we skipped over. I have like no interest in Philip Lindsay anymore. There was like a little bit of time in the preseason where I was interested, not interested really in Rashad Penny, Chuba Hubbard, you know, whatever. And then I guess you can put Darrington Evans in this here, but I feel like his, weird thing to say, but I almost like Darrington Evans more in best ball than in managed, because I feel like Evans is going to kind of be a roster clogger where we don't really know he's the true handcuff. And so I might hold him for 8 weeks or whatever. And then if Derrick Henry were to miss a week, we might get, you know, Jeremy McNichols or Brian Hill getting more carries. But as Eric Beimfor has pointed out, if Evans is the guy, that probably tilts the Titans way more pass heavy. So he positively correlates with AJ Brown, Julio Jones, Tannehill, and Firkser. But I don't think I've taken Evans yet in a managed league. But the big guys in the pass catching tier are Hines, Bernard, James White. And then I do think there is enough smoke to put Kenneth Gainwell in this tier as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm maybe a little bit more interested in Evans than you are. Like, they did play Jeremy McNichols a ton, and I don't think that was something they were like excited about doing. So it's sort of one of those things where you have a guy getting a lot of empty passing down snaps. Those snaps weren't going to Derrick Henry. And the fact that they were playing McNichols over Henry in those situations, I think, again, speaks to kind of what Henry's role is and isn't. Evans coming in does provide upside for a lot more production out of a similar role. So I think you have to squint a little bit, but similarly to how you have to squint a little bit to see it for Gainwell, I think it's fine to be taking Evans. I think the clear guys, it's like a tier of four. It's Hines, McKissick, White, Geo. Those are the guys where you're like, I'm going to get this guy, and he's probably starting for me week one. And the way I've played that is to like take whoever's cheapest. Like if there's White and Geo and I'm coming around a turn, I'm not usually taking my preference of those guys. I do like Geo more than White, but I want to keep that investment as cheap as possible because there is really no upside. It's just a guy that you're looking to start.
Yeah, these are like upgraded versions of Ty Johnson, right? Like that's kind of what it is. It's like you're kind of open for like 12 points per game with these
upgraded
guys.
Darrell Williams.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing exciting to say about this tier. And Nyheim Hines probably actually loses quite a bit of value with Jacob Eason playing quarterback because I don't expect Jacob Eason to be good.
That hurts Jonathan Taylor, I think, more than Nyheim Hines. We've got like, okay, the team's going to be passing more and the guy's a statue. Why wouldn't we want the passing down back in a team that utilizes a passing down back? Like that's actually, I think Hines's ADP falling has been a little bit odd to me. I got him on Saturday with Zachary Kruger. We did a draft in the FFPC best ball tournament and we got him the latest that anyone has gotten him in the entire tournament so far. So
this is Hines.
This is Nyheim Hines.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't really understand. The other thing is Wentz might try to play through this thing and not be able to move, which is great for Hines. Like that's ideal. Wentz has a little bit of mobility. Like Wentz might all of a sudden be more like Phillip Rivers in the way he's playing. I think all of this has actually been a little bit bullish for Hines. And his price has fallen. So I wasn't really taking Hines because, again, I'm trying to keep my investment in this low upside passing back very cheap. But now that Hines is falling, I'm actually pretty excited because I'm able to mix him back into that portfolio. I'm not so heavy on Geo and White. I don't have as much McKissick as those two guys, but
that's what I was going to say.
Another guy to add is great.
That's what I was going to say is McKissick is the one who is least appealing to me. One, because Antonio Gibson is my second highest exposure player in best ball. And layering those, like if McKissick has a good season, it means Gibson was not a good pick where he went. Like the whole Gibson thing is about him retaining the role he had from last season. And then also what McKissick had 90 receptions last year.
McKissick had like 6.75 targets per game.
Yeah, those two things cannot coexist. And so, because I'm setting up my portfolio to be so heavy on Gibson, I have to be betting against McKissick.
Yeah, although, I mean, I'm not opposed to taking McKissick. It's just that there's a lot of drafts where he does kind of fall in a range where I like, and then I already have Gibson. So if you're, you obviously can't take them both. So it, like, I'm okay having a little bit of a hedge on this Gibson position with some cheap McKissick, but I'm also not going to reach for McKissick in drafts where I don't have Gibson.
Yeah, so I mean, this is like the least exciting tier of zero running back guys, because you are never talking yourself into these guys having like top 12 running back seasons. Like the James White season where he finished like running back 7 or whatever was like one of the most anomalous outcomes in fantasy football history. It'll never happen.
Well, you do have
again.
Some. I mean, Danny Woodhead had that season with the Chargers. Like, you do sometimes have one of these guys pop, but it's not necessarily like the guy you think it's going to be going in. And that's like, again, trying to keep the investment cheap here, because the performances feel very random among this group. Like that, you know, that James White season, like, No one saw that coming. Then people kind of chased it for a few years. Didn't happen again. Like the Woodhead seasons never happened again. So yeah, I think keeping this tier cheap is smart. The one that who's kind of in this tier that I think I can't really figure out, like, should he belong in the tier that we just talked about before, the cheapest tier or not? Chuba Hubbard. Like, what's the difference between him and Samaje Perine or Devontae Booker? Like, are we overdrafting him? On the other hand, like, he might be a lot more talented, and, you know, maybe he gets a little standalone value. Maybe they try to keep McCaffrey a little bit fresh. Like, you know, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I feel like he's probably a little bit overpriced, but I think that opinion could end up burning me.
Yeah, he's a little overpriced because there is the thought, I think, from the market that he just would be like the Mike Davis or whatever. And I think, you know, I think they'd probably play Trenton Cannon a little bit, like, I or not, you know, I don't know. I just have no certainty. Like, I have absolutely no certainty on him at all. And so I do like, for example, in the main event, 17 completed main events, over the, since it started, he's going on average as the RB51, 145th overall. I think, like, even like he, I think I'd rather have Geo. I think I'd rather have Gainwell. I think I'd rather have Damien, you know, just kind of given how these things played out. So then the next tier is our premium handcuffs and our standalone, like, slash contingent value guys. And this is actually the range where I think you need to be most picky, because I think they're all pretty good bets. But, like, I don't want to have the wrong guys in here. So this tier, it goes, like, I would say it starts at Tony Pollard at RB34 and then runs to Alexander Mattison at RB46. The ones that I like are Pollard, AJ Dillon, Ronald Jones, Jamal Williams, and Murray. I do not like taking David Johnson. I really don't like taking Gus Edwards. I think we are so enamored by this Gus Edwards, like, touchdown thing from last. I do not see it with him at all. James Conner, I just, like, I don't know. He got paid $2 million and he's no good. And, like, I don't think he would be very effective.
But he's behind
catching
a guy in the last year of his contract who's also no good.
But I think Chase Edmonds is good.
Well, he's been terrible as a rusher. I pulled these numbers for the pod I did with Daigle, and
I think we might see Eno Benjamin come up from the crypt, honestly.
That would be hilarious if this ended up being, no one's talking about him anymore, he just smashes in a second year.
I think it would kind of be like what happened with Damian Harris, where Damian Harris, what he didn't play as a rookie or only got like 10 carries as a rookie or something, right, and then was the lead carrier the next year. Like, Eno was a super productive player in college. Like, why can't that happen?
It could. I mean, I think it's like one side's yelling at the other that James Conner's done. The other side's yelling at the other that, you know, Chase Edmonds never shown anything outside of a little bit of pass catching ability. And we could both be right. And if we're both right, then it might be, you know, Benjamin.
Yeah. But yeah, like, just basically I find myself essentially never taking him. Like, I'm out on him. So my guys, in this tier of like premium handcuffs are Pollard, Dillon, Rojo, and Latavius. And I also do like, so like Jamal Williams is one of those where I never take him at cost, but he is also a guy who routinely will just drop 10 picks in a given draft. And I think he's fine. To, like, a round later on him feels good.
I agree. I think Jamal Williams is actually pretty interesting. I am in on Connor, and I actually am in on Chase Edmonds too when he falls, because this is ambiguous, and this is definitely one where we want the starter. I mean, the starter for the Cardinals is going to have a lot of value. And yeah, there's maybe a chance that it's Eno Benjamin, but like, it's not going to
I don't think Eno Benjamin will be the starter. What I'm saying is, in the event that they try the Chase Edmonds as lead back thing and it doesn't work out, that they don't go, okay, we're giving James Conner 18 touches a game. It would be like Chase Edmonds third down, James Conner at the goal line, and Eno Benjamin kind of steals a little bit from both of them, and they play three running backs.
Yeah, but I wouldn't rule out the possibility that they do decide to lean on James Conner, who has been kind of that mold, much more so than Chase Edmonds, like the workhorse guy, the guy that they can use around the goal line. Played a ton of passing down snaps last year, pass blocked pretty well. He was bad in yards per out run last year, but he's been good at times as a receiver throughout his career. So it's like, he's the more natural fit, I think. And he's cheap. He's not very expensive. Sometimes it goes in the ninth round in the main event, which I think is too expensive.
Yeah, so that's the other thing is James Conner would be like, sure, maybe I'll take him in the 11th round on underdog sometimes, but main event drafters are not giving you that discount on him. It's not happening.
Well, he went in the 10th of the main event draft that I'm in right now. He went in the mid-10th, and I think that's fine. I mean, given that FFPC, you know, there's not a lot of these guys who make it to the 10th, I think he's fine. The David Johnson was selected one pick before him. Leonard Fournette was gone. Tony Pollard was gone. Like all the guys you'd want ahead of him were gone. Kenyon Drake went after him. Jamal Williams went after him. And actually Gus Edwards went after him, selected by us. So I wanted to get your sense on Gus Edwards, because like, we weren't in position, right, in the ninth round, had not selected a running back yet, and Raheem Mostert was there. So we thought real, real, real hard about taking Raheem Mostert. Ended up going with A.J. Dillon as our first running back. Feel like he gives us probably pretty close to the standalone value, definitely less, but way more contingent value. Like, there's no world where they just lean on Mostert this year. They're going to mix in some other guys.
See, I completely disagree. I think Mostert has a chance to be like a huge win rate player for the 49 for best ball players.
Okay, but in managed leagues, like what are the chances that they actually just like lean on Mostert? I mean, they're talking about Sermon and taking the early down work because they want to use Mostert in this like kind of speed back capacity. If Sermon goes down, Jeff Wilson is going to be that guy once he gets back, or Wayne Gallman's going to be that guy. You know, like
you don't even have to go back that far to see them feeding Mostert though. Like for
3 weeks, but he's been a spike week guy. He's had some really nice spike weeks. I mean, I guess in the playoffs, right, he's just like smashing. He scored all his touchdowns against Green Bay. But again, I mean, he's like a spike week dude.
I don't know. They use him in the passing game too. I feel like the market feels very high on Trey Sermon, who to me was a very overrated prospect. Like, not a guy who is, you know, we talk about like really athletic running backs. That wasn't really him. Third round running backs bust all the time. Like, you know, 88th overall is not 54th overall. Like, there is a legitimate difference there. Jeff Wilson Jr., who I actually think you should legitimately be afraid of. Like, who knows what's up with his health situation? He is good, but he might not be back to like week 9 or something like that. And then you're looking at Elijah Mitchell, Jamichael Hasty, Wayne Gallman types who are like, maybe they sprinkle them in. Like, I don't think Mostert will ever play like 90% of the snaps for them or anything like that. But I think he could be like a 17 touch per week guy in this super efficient rushing offense. We know rushing quarterbacks add efficiency to their running backs. I think Mostert's per game touch upside and passing game utilization is like miles ahead of what the market is anticipating. Like I have Mostert ranked higher than Trey Sermon in my rankings, and I feel pretty confident about that.
So why are you in on Mostert and then not in on Gus Edwards? We got Gus Edwards, we got in the 10th round. So yeah. To me, I want like the AJ Dillon thing, I think worked out really well because we got a path to more contingent value. Like if Aaron Jones were to miss time, I think they would lean on AJ Dillon the way they've leaned on Jamal Williams.
Well, AJ Dillon might be the best zero running back. If I was doing my list right now, I mean, ETN would be number one, but I think Dillon would be top five if I did my list right now.
Yeah, he's got that like beautiful mix of, you know, a guy that you feel pretty decent about starting week one, given how strong you're going to be at every other position. And then if things break for him, then he could just be an absolute smash. So Dillon, I agree. I think Dillon's probably my top guy. Like for price, I think he offers the most right now. But Mostert was difficult to pass on. But to get Edwards, like what is really the difference between Gus Edwards and Raheem Mostert? I guess it's that Gus Edwards is basically the cheap version of Trey Sermon, because J.K. Dobbins is sort of the expensive version of Raheem Mostert.
So these are the things with Edwards. One, not an explosive player. Like Mostert could occasionally get there for you in a game on eight touches. And this is true in best ball and in managed, right? Like Mostert went to Purdue as a track runner. He did not even go there originally as a running back. The other thing is Mostert has some contingent value, right? We've already seen it with the Jeff Wilson Jr. injury kind of pushing his ADP up a little bit. Were Trey Sermon to get injured, yes, they would work in Elijah Mitchell or Gallman or whoever, but I don't think they would work him in as much. I think that J.K. Dobbins and Justice Hill and Tyson Williams could like retire tomorrow and they would pull, I don't know, give me a good dusty old running back name. Well,
Alfred Morris just signed, so they can't do him.
No, I was thinking of the guy who used to play on the Alex Collins. They'd sign like Alex Collins or something like that. Like, I just think that I think Gus Edwards is completely stuck in the role that he is in. And his season from last year, 144 rushes, 852 total yards, 6 touchdowns. I mean, sure, he could like run insanely hot. Like he could just score every time they give him the ball on the 4-yard line. And like, you know, that could end up being the way he gets there. But I think basically what I'm saying is I think he has no contingent value.
I don't think he does either. But I don't think Mostert really does either. I think that's the part of the Mostert pitch that I'm not really buying. Because I just think Mostert has not been a guy that they've really fed. They've had, not only have they not fed Mostert specifically.
But that's not true though. They have fed him and they have fed him in high leverage games.
They did feed him in that Green Bay game, I suppose. But what like he's in a system where they like give the guy like 35, the lead guy gets like 35% of the snaps. Like Tevin Coleman in that lead back role was like ceding massive snaps to the other guys. Like it's not even a Mostert thing. It's like a philosophical thing.
Yeah, really and maybe I'm wrong, but also like what I'm also saying is like I think Mostert is like actually like good and explosive, and I don't find that to be true about Gus Edwards at all. Like I think Gus Edwards has had
yards per carry. I know it's yards per carry, but 5.2, 5.3, and 5. That's, you know, it's not like he's
the most talented
running back ever, but he's been efficient. And I know it's the system.
That's the Lamar.
Extent.
That's the Lamar thing, though. Which I don't think he'll be worse than that. But maybe this is wrong. Maybe like I'm thinking about this the wrong way and I need to think about it more. But like Gus Edwards is never like delivering like a week with like 12 carries, 111 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like he's not breaking off like 55 yard touchdowns. You know what I mean? Whereas like Mostert, like we already have seen evidence of him doing this like routinely.
I mean, he did have like, he had 8 carries, 112 yards and a touchdown in 2019.
I've been hoisted by my own petard, Pat.
He had 21 carries, 130 yards, and he didn't get in the end zone in that game. Like I don't think he's just completely dead to run hot with efficiency because he's playing with Lamar. He's been efficient throughout his career. He's not Mostert. He's not, to your point, like Mostert, I think, had the 2 fastest plays in NFL.
Yeah, he's the fastest ball carrier.
It's insane. Like he is an elite speed back. Like there's no question. But you know, you're getting, if you're able to get Gus Edwards, you know, a full round later, and you're taking a guy that I think does have significantly more contingent value than AJ Dillon. I mean, it wasn't a no-brainer. We like hemmed and hawed on this for like 2 hours. So, you know, if you prefer the Mostert side, I 100% get it. But that's just like Gus Edwards, I think, does allow you to at least arbitrage Mostert, if nothing else.
Yeah. And so I guess, and then the other point here is like, I would prefer Gus Edwards in best ball versus managed, where like, I think most weeks where Gus Edwards doesn't score a touchdown, he's getting you like 6.5 points.
Yeah. And I feel the same way about Mostert too. I think, you know, he's
fair enough.
He's been a little easier to start. But you know, he's kind of like he pops on big plays. Like he has these games where he just like runs for an 80-yard touchdown and then he doesn't
and
do
maybe I'm just overrating the chances that Mostert becomes like the lead back in San Francisco. Like maybe that just won't happen.
Like in week 2 versus the Jets, he had 8 attempts, 92 yards and a touchdown. He also
that was the McKinnon game. McKinnon scored twice in that game.
They win 31-13 in that game. So like that's a setup where you think like, okay, the lead back here is going to smash, but that's not really the way they played. I think Shanahan's too smart. He's like, Mostert is actually really talented.
My God. In that game, Tevin Coleman had 14 carries for 12 yards.
Right. Sermon will feast in those scripts. It's like, Mostert, I don't think. And I think if not Sermon, Gallman, and if not Gallman, Jeff Wilson, and if not Jeff Wilson, maybe Elijah Mitchell, like they're going to find somebody who fits their certain roles. Like Mostert's there to be like the home run hitter, and why waste your home run hitter when you're already up by 2 scores? You're going to use your grinder for that. So I like Mostert. I just think that, you know, like I want to be kind of thinking through like the contingent value thing. I think he's going to struggle to really ever cobble together. Like,
let's say that Trey Sermon just is not, like, he's not the dude. Like, they draft him in the third round and he's just not quite there. What do you see happening in the 49ers backfield? Do you think it's like Gallman takes over that or Elijah Mitchell plays that?
I think Mitchell's probably a Mostert backup. You know, he's like another speed back. I think like if Wilson isn't healthy or just, you know, isn't able to recover from the injury and Sermon sucks and Gallman gets hurt, then, you know, then maybe Mostert does just kind of get fed. But that's a lot of stuff that has to go wrong.
Right.
So it's not impossible. And to your point, I pulled up the Green Bay one. He did get 29 carries in that Green Bay game, went for 220 yards and 4 touchdowns. So he has once in his career been fed, but other than that game, he has never had 20 plus carries ever.
The other thing is that the beat writers before camp started were really bullish on him, and they've actually toned it down a little bit since camp started. I mean, but they've been there for like 3 days. But before camp started, the Athletic beat writers for San Francisco were saying like, it's going to be Mostert. Like Mostert is going to be the clear lead back. And then what Shanahan had that quote the other day about Sermon in the first half to like, you know, body blows or whatever. Yeah. I just registered for the puppy too, cause it just opened up and I just took Raheem Mostert.
So, I didn't know it opened up. All right. Well, there
just,
goes my
I mean, it literally just opened up. So I guess here let's close the knot on the rest of these guys. Latavius, or are you? Do you want to vouch for any of the guys I skipped over? Melvin Gordon, Zach Moss, Leonard Fournette, Kenyon Drake, Jamal. We talked a little bit about Jamal or David Johnson.
The two would be Zach Moss and Kenyon Drake. Kenyon Drake, I think, is kind of like a worse version of the Geo class, but has more contingent value. I think he'd actually be pretty interesting. You know, if Josh Jacobs were to miss some games, he's actually quite interesting. So he's worth considering. And then Zach Moss, I mean, we don't know if he can make a second year leap. He was actually a pretty interesting prospect, kind of in that David Montgomery mold where he was like, kind of makes people miss. And then the question is like, can you ever figure out how to do anything after you make people miss? Dave Montgomery did that last year against really bad defenses. Maybe, you know, Moss can also add a little bit more there. And then what if they don't use Josh Allen as their goal line back this year? What if they're like, that was kind of
aggressive? The whole thing for Zach Moss.
Yeah. And there's been reports that if he shows well, he can take over the backfield. Like, that language has been tossed around by the beat writers there. So I think Moss is pretty interesting. I think Moss is actually fairly close, like, to Dylan, where you're getting the guy who's actually the lead back in his offense. And we're just deciding that we don't care about who the lead back in this offense is because of what happened last year. But we could be wrong about how much value there is in that backfield. So Moss, I think I would definitely like Drake. I think keep Drake in mind. You know, I wouldn't completely write him off. Moss, I think, is a target. I think he's someone we should be considering strongly in this range.
Yeah. All right. Now we are to the premium zero running back guys. And for me, pretty easy. Tony Pollard, obvious, same proposition he is every year. Though, you know, they don't really have a fourth wide receiver. Maybe they do spell Elliott a little bit more. Like, maybe like in best ball, I think you can count on two spiked weeks from Pollard for whatever reason, even if Elliott stays healthy for the whole season. Though he did miss one game last year, Pollard, I don't think they gave Rick O'Dowdle a touch in that game, if memory serves me correctly. Darrell Henderson going on average is the RB31, total smash. I have no interest in James Robinson, literally have not taken him once. You are more interested in Michael Carter than me. I'm not that interested in Trey Sermon. I was out on Chase Edmonds. Then do you remember that report? This got to be like 2 weeks ago now, where they said, like, why are we even having this conversation? Like, it's asinine. Chase Edmonds is the lead running back. Kareem Hunt, are you in on Kareem Hunt? I'm not. I don't really take him. And if I get burned by that, like, I feel like the Kareem Hunt thing is really not that different than Tony Pollard, to be honest. Like, he will get seven more touches per game than Tony Pollard does if the lead back stays healthy. But I don't view Hunt as like a league winning guy there at all.
Yeah, we're actually getting up into the range where these guys like aren't part of zero running back builds in a lot of cases. Like,
right. You know,
Chase Edmonds went in the fifth round of the first main event that we did, and he went in the fifth round of the one that I'm in now. So, I mean, that's not a zero running back pick.
Correct.
At that point, right. You're taking an ambiguous backfield and you're making a big bet that, you know, the projected starter is the starter. So James Conner is a zero running back pick in the 10th. Chase Edmonds is like kind of a classic dead zone pick in the 5th. If Chase Edmonds is in, you know, the seventh. I've seen him in the late 7th, 8th on underdog. I think at that point, that's where you can start to mix him in as a zero running back guy. You have to have these guys fall. Hunt went in the 7th of this main event we're in. I think he's fine there. Carter went in the 7th. I'm more on Carter than you, but that's pricey. I want him more in the 8th, 9th. Like, that's kind of the profile that he fits. Like, to me, he fits more of that, like, Zach Moss, AJ Dillon-y type of profile, where we have some questions, you know. We have some questions even about, like, how good Michael Carter is. But, yeah, so in the 7th, and Trey Sermon in the 7th, Damien Harris in the 7th. I'm just looking at this main event board I don't like any of these guys. James Robinson to me is kind of interesting if he gets to the 10th. Alexander Mattison went in the 9th in this board, which was kind of insane. It was to the Dalvin Cook owner. So, you know, you gotta reach to lock up your handcuff, I guess. But yeah, so this is the range where I think I'm most price sensitive. And really, if I'm gonna take an expensive guy, it's gotta be, I think, ETN.
Yep.
And then Williams, I think Javonte Williams, I think, also makes sense. And he's someone I think who makes more sense in manage than best ball.
And he's going to get a little cheaper for us too, because of all these reports about Melvin Gordon being the clear lead running back to start camp. Like, we're going to see Javonte slip into the 7th and 8th, I think.
Oh, well, he's a smash there. And because again, in managed leagues, like the type of running back production that your league mates are going to be getting from, you know, their 5th round Mike Davis pick, their 5th round Chase Edmonds, or 5th round Josh Jacobs, like, unless things like really swing in the right direction for them, they're not really even getting that many points out of those guys, the Myles Gaskin, right? So if you have to figure it out with the Giovanni Bernard, like, Javonte Williams can sit on your bench for the first 3-4 weeks. The whole reason to take Javonte Williams is that he takes that job over and is really good and is a workhorse down the stretch and has kind of, you know, the Cam Akers, but hopefully a little bit sooner type of profile, where,
right,
all of a sudden, like, you're heading into, you know, the last 3 weeks of the regular season and you have a hammer. So I like Javonte Williams. He's going in a sixth right now. I think that's pretty good, especially with FFPC, like the running back thirst to have him in the sixth. You know, I talked about all these guys, you know, Alexander Mattison, the ninth, James Robinson, the eighth, like give me Javonte Williams in the sixth there. Travis Etienne went in the early fifth here. I really wish he was going more like the late fifth. It would just be so much easier to add him. There's a lot of opportunity cost still usually where he's going, but if you just went a little bit later to like 5, 12, 601, I would be hammering him there. So I'm trying to decide, like, is he someone that I should just kind of force it with now and get exposure to, or kind of pray that his ADP drops a little bit? Maybe we get some reports about Carlos Hyde and James Robinson.
Yeah. So ETN, I think, is number one for me. He would be tops of the zero RB list, especially in underdog ADP right now. Underdog and drafters, yeah. He goes, like, you can routinely get him in the sixth, sometimes every once in a while in the seventh round if it's really a hardcore ship chasers draft and people are taking like Mecole Hardman ahead of him.
You can get him in the sixth. It's pretty awesome. I like getting how expensive is too expensive for you with ETN?
For me, it would be like the fifth round where I am not, I like, you know, if it's like Odell Beckham or Travis Etienne or Chase Claypool or Travis Etienne, I'm taking the wide receiver, but I do really like Etienne. I tweeted this yesterday and Gretsch talked about it on Stealing Bananas, but like it is just so clear how he has that second half rookie year hero season, the way that, you know, David Johnson did, the way that Nick Chubb did, the way that Jonathan Taylor did, where
DeAndre Swift,
where Trevor Lawrence hits his ceiling a little bit earlier than we thought, right? Where Trevor Lawrence just plays pretty well early on. ETN plays a little bit early on, you know, kind of as the pass catching role or whatever. James Robinson finds himself being, you know, mostly unimpressive, like, you know, just kind of a grinder, you know, get the job done style guy. And that he just plays well, right? Like, I think Travis Etienne is very good. Some people don't. Some people think that he is not of that, you know, David Johnson, Nick Chubb caliber. I don't know. I mean, I think he, to me at Clemson, he seemed like he did the in between the tackle stuff. He did the big plays. He was decent when they did target him. They didn't target him a ton. You know, maybe that's more of like he profiles as a guy who should catch a lot of passes, like his size and his speed, yeah, and everything. And, you know, we've already gotten the, in a weird, you could view this as positive or negative depending on your position on him, but we've already gotten the, oh, you know, he's going to play the Joker. He took all the OTA reps at wide receiver, and you could be like, well, that's bad because then that means they don't view him as a workhorse. Or you could say that's good because it kind of gives him multiple ways to get there.
I think it's really good. I think it's, the more I think about it, I think it's like crazy good because we've seen, like, you know, you see a guy like CJ Spiller, you see a guy like, you know, like Felix Jones, or, you know, some of these dudes who, like, or maybe kind of ETN's downside comps to some extent. And they're not, like, those dudes weren't used in like a heavy reception way. They were used more like they were kind of like Chris Johnson or something, like, just, you know, they're used more like a speed back as opposed to like an Alvin Kamara type guy. And to get ETN immediately into that role, I guess I'm thinking like a little bit longer term too, like 2-3 years from now, this is the path where 2-3 years from now, ETN is like the 101.
Yep.
Because he's getting what he needs, the reception volume. He's getting that as part of his game, and he's getting it into the minds of whatever coaching staff is going to use this guy going forward. Because I also wouldn't necessarily be betting on like Daryl Bevel coaching this team in 2024. You know what I mean? Like, I think that we could be looking potentially at another staff coming in, and hopefully, you know, the fact that he was used in this like really high receiving capacity will kind of make people view him as something that they would be foolish not to incorporate. So I guess from a long-term perspective, it's like mega, mega bullish, I think. But even from a rookie year perspective, still getting like that level of receiving volume at the running back position is just so, so valuable. Even if he's Austin Eckler at the goal line, like, he can easily pay off his ADP. Like,
yeah,
you know, what's the difference really between him and Austin Eckler? Like, I think the difference might be that, you know, maybe Eckler's going to get more receiving work. But another difference might be that Etienne's not totally dead in terms of the goal line rushing. Like he might get worked in there. So, I mean, just the receiving value is so important for these running backs. So I think that Etienne, I agree with you. Like, I really, really wish he was not having to go ahead of Brandon Ayuk like he did in this draft, ahead of Chase Claypool like he did in this draft. But then there's kind of a tier break at wide receiver. So if he just went a little bit later, or maybe those ADPs on those wide receivers will get juiced even more, and Etienne in the mid-fifth will look like a smash.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, the premium, like the premium zero RB guys are Etienne, and it will be Javonte price sensitive, depending on what happens to him, Daryl Henderson, Tony Pollard, AJ Dillon. And it's just, that's the group. And then I maybe you could create like Michael Carter's the RB29. It's just so pricey to me. I know you like him, but I can't get there. And then Damian Harris is the other one. I know our friend Josh Norris from Underdog Fantasy like loves that dude, but I can't get there because I don't see any pass. Like I would much rather have a portfolio filled with Ramondre and James White.
Yeah, I can't get there on Harris. And it's not because I disagree with Josh. Like I think all the reports he's getting, I think are probably 100% accurate. Like they're
to
feature him, but he's limited. He's not going to catch passes, and this isn't an offense we're excited about. And I feel pretty confident that we're not going to be like kicking ourselves for not heavily investing in the New England two down lead back. And then also like, what does this backfield look like in week 11 or week 12? You know, like week one, I think for sure, but I also think Stevenson can play. And so I kind of want to bet on him to force the issue a little bit over the course of the season. Obviously he could end up just getting the Damian Harris treatment and be an inactive all season. Harris has outs to delivering pretty decent value in the seventh round, but it's just not the type of profile that I find all that attractive. Michael Carter, I don't have an issue with the RB29 or whatever part of his profile. It's the seventh round in the main event part of his profile that I have an issue with. Like if all of these running backs are a little expensive, I think Carter, I think would be really attractive because, you know, like RB29, like essentially saying he doesn't have a chance to be kind of the clear lead back in a committee in an offense where we do want to be investing in. And I think the Jets could surprise people. I think their offensive line's actually pretty solid. And I do think he has a pretty decent chance to be the lead back in the committee. So that part of it, I like. I don't like that he's, you know, going behind or going ahead of Laviska Shenault in drafts that, you know, I'm not in. Going ahead of Tyler Boyd. You know, he's going ahead a lot of wide receivers that I'd much rather have. So not a ton, I guess, maybe. But there's a handful of wide receivers that I think are better bets than Michael Carter. And there's other guys like other zero running back targets going like 2-3 rounds later that I like just as much. So I have him in Underdog, but I haven't had him. I haven't been able to take him yet in the main event.
Yeah. Which I think is fine. Like, cause Carter is like a guy that at the end of the year, if he ends up being a guy with like a positive win rate and best ball or whatever, I guess I would not be that surprised, but so for example, right now in main event ADP, he is going ahead of Jerry Jeudy. He's going ahead of Juju. He's going ahead of Debo, ahead of DJ Shark, ahead of Visca, ahead of Tyler Boyd. I'm taking the wide receiver there every single time. Yeah. Now, where for me, the big tier break at wide receiver is after Boyd and before Brandon Cooks. And like, Will Fuller, whatever you get, like, there are guys in here I like, but
that's the thing though. It's like Will Fuller, he's so cheap. Michael Gallup's still really cheap. The Gallup thing's kind of, I guess, is related to Dak's shoulder.
Yeah, this Gallup mini dip in ADP is going to end up really skewing my exposures because there's never a time I'm going to be in a draft in the eighth round and see Gallup there and not take him.
I know. So that's, I agree with you. There's a tier break where there's all of a sudden guys you're getting drafted that I don't want. Because like before that, it's like pretty much everyone there is like, I'll take this guy.
Yeah, and then Cooks, Antonio Brown, Curtis Samuel, Michael Pittman, not really into those guys, but I am really into Gallup and Marquise Brown. Though Marquise Brown did just hurt his hamstring, apparently.
Oh, okay. Well, Marquise Brown was the other one I was going to say. So, and yeah, those guys, there's like a little, that trio, Fuller, Gallup, Brown, like it's hard not to take those guys. So Gallup has, or Carter has to kind of not only get behind, you know, guys like Visca and Boyd and Shark, but he needs to fall behind an entire another group for me to really be interested. And sometimes he does on underdog, but most of the time I just kind of have resigned myself to the idea that I probably won't have him in the main event this year.
Yeah. Which is like, I'm cool with that. I'm pretty cool with that. So yeah, that was a good zero RB, a moose boosh, I think. I mean, obviously Sean's list will be more in depth, and will maybe he will, like, he just swung me on DeAndre Swift. Him and Gretz just did a show where they projected the first two rounds of 2022, and he had DeAndre Swift as his 104. And I was like, well, maybe I need to start drafting DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, I'm in on DeAndre Swift. The Lions thing, like, I'm also kind of more in on Hockenson than you, because I think, like, the Lions offensive line is not terrible. It's actually, like, solid. And I honestly don't think these coaches are, like, just total – they're not cavemen in the sense of, like, they're just going to kind of try to grind the clock and go home. They're, like, I think the team's going to – I think the team's bought in. Like, you know, you've got that – the video that went viral of Blau watching his wife qualify, you know, in that heat and everything. Like, I think that a lot of the stuff that Campbell says that's like seems ludicrous and stupid to us is actually like somewhat charming.
No, the football players are like, I'm ready to run through a wall for this guy.
I don't think this team's quitting on this guy is what I'm saying. Like, I think Houston's going to want to go home as soon as possible. I don't think that the Lions are going to quit on Campbell, and that means, and also I think Anthony Lynn, like, while I would not hire Anthony Lynn to manage an NFL clock for me, and it's probably not like the best head coach, like, he is actually the coach under which Justin Herbert just had this awesome season, you know. Sure. He is the coach under which Austin Eckler was having a ton of value. Like, I think we've been a little bit unfair to Anthony Lynn in terms of what he can deliver fantasy wise for an offense. So I like Swift to an extent. Obviously, I want to manage the price there, because this is an extremely risky time to be investing in running backs. But, you know, in the third round, sometimes in the fourth round, I think Swift makes a lot of sense. And in the fourth round, Swift almost becomes kind of part of, like,
which is where he was going for a little while. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you can justify him as kind of like an expensive version of ETN there and go, you know, you're taking a detour. The whole thing with the zero running back stuff, people get all bent out of shape about, you know, like, well, if you do this as zero running back, we're just trying to draft a ton of wide receivers and dominate the flex with the wide receiver position and take an anti-fragile approach to running back, where we discount productions, emphasize talent, and emphasize the fact that there's going to be a ton of chaos. Like, that's the whole plan. Like, it doesn't really matter, like, when you take running backs within that plan. And so I think, like, whether you want to call it a one elite running back, if you're grabbing Swift in the third or fourth, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, like, I think he very much fits that plan. You can take the detour for Swift, and then you can come right back and get back into structure and hammer wide receivers again. So I haven't listened to Stealing Bananas yet. That's pretty exciting that they had him at the 104 next year. But
well, Gretch didn't. I totally Gretch get it. Didn't, but Go Sean did. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right, so everyone, there's the zero RB list. Of course, listen to Ship Chasing every Wednesday night. You guys can sign up for premium access to their Discord, all the cool stuff. You can do a league with Pat and Pete if you want. There's all sorts of opportunities over there. And then what's coming on NBC Sports Edge this week?
I'm gonna have some articles out on running backs, and a good football show every Tuesday at 2:30. Eastern. I'm hosting that every week, and I'm gonna be working on a dynasty rankings update refresh. I you know, bumped down Akers and bumped down Michael Thomas, and, you know, so they reflect those changes, but I'm gonna kind of go through this week and give him a little bit of a facelift to reflect some training camp news.
Yeah, I need to go through mine as well, because all of the injury news in that auction league you and I are in together, it all broke my way. Like, I have Troutman. I have some guys, so I need to be selling.
I traded Michael Thomas and I think a third for T. Higgins and a second. So, you know.
There we go. Ship chasing, yeah. Baby. Ship chasing. All right. Everyone follow Pat on Twitter. Watch the Good Football Show. Read NBC Sports Edge. Subscribe to Ship Chasing. And we will be back later this week.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino. America's
social casino. Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.